HPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. NASHU officials say they're now looking at Plan B since the Executive Council rejected federal monies to study a rail line from Boston to Nashua and Concord. Last month, three of the five councilors voted against the $3.5 million grant, including the Nashua Region's councilor, David Wheeler. He and other opponents pointed out that the proposed study would require a $400,000 state match, too expensive, they said, given the many demands on state government. So Nashua is looking at other ideas, perhaps scaling back the project or looking at other partnerships and sources of money. But if the past is any indicator, the Gateway City's quest for rail could be a long one. Despite years of discussion and study of this issue, New Hampshire as a whole has been skeptical of getting on board with passenger trains. And the concern always boils down to this. Our state's population is too small and too spread out to make the huge investment in rail worth the money. Today in The Exchange, recent roadblocks for rail in the Granite State and whether this type of transportation makes sense for us or not. Let's hear from you. How realistic is rail for a largely rural and suburban state like New Hampshire? Also, given that gas taxes cannot be used for trains, where would the money come from to build and operate such a system? Give us a call, The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. With us in studio, Matthew Coogan, director of the nonprofit New England Transportation Institute. Matthew is also a former undersecretary of transportation for the state of Massachusetts. And Matthew, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for coming in.
And thank you for inviting me.
Also with us, Peter Griffin, president of the New Hampshire Railroad Revitalization Association. And Peter, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, and Peter, let's start with you. The rap against rail has long been what I just said, that we don't have the population base to support it. We're too spread out. There aren't enough of us to justify the cost. What's your argument against that, Peter?
First of all, Laura, I think it's a fallacy that we don't have the population base. Southern New Hampshire is really suburban Boston. There's a huge population base there that would use rail for commuter purposes. But we can't only look at rail as for commuter purposes. Tourism is one of the major industries in the state and came to prominence because of the great regions, White Mountains, Seacoast, et cetera, were made accessible by public transportation. That is not the case anymore. And as gas prices go up, what will the tourist organizations in New Hampshire do to attract people if they can't drive here by automobile?
Well, 4 years ago, 3 years ago in 2008, gas prices were through the roof. And actually, tourism officials found that they weren't that affected because we're so close to major population centers.
I think long term, there'll be a different story. As transportation costs become more larger part of our daily budgets, people will begin to think twice about driving distances for having fun and for vacation. They'll hop on the Down East and go to Maine instead.
Talking about the commuters, Peter, what are the estimates of how many people might take a commuter train, so every day down to Boston or wherever, and how reliable are those estimates?
Laura, I can't give you an exact figure because that was part of what the study was going to look at that was rejected by the Executive Council. What is the projected ridership? And that was just looking in one line, but then there are several lines that enter Massachusetts. The Manchester and Lawrence corridor that parallels Route 93. There's the Seacoast corridor that parallels Route 95, and then there's the Down East corridor that also is in that Seacoast area. So there's more than one corridor that you would have to look at to identify how many people would take trains.
Yeah, and it's I would imagine hard to get reliable estimates, Peter, because you know people say, "Oh, sure, I'll take the train," and then when the train is actually built, "Oh, gee, I got a meeting today," or "Oh, gee, I have a doctor's appointment. I guess I'll have to drive."
But Laura, I think one of the points is we have to look at how we live our lives. We just don't commute. For instance, Boston, if Boston is the great economic engine in the southern part of the southern part of the state, Boston's a medical destination, cultural, educational, sports, retail. People will use the train for other purposes other than commuting. And what about attracting business to New Hampshire? Let's say hypothetically we are going after a big Boston company that wants to open a satellite up here. could we offer them the opportunity of public transportation to reduce their relocation costs?
Well, Matthew Coogan, I want to get you into this. And again, I said you're a former Undersecretary of Transportation for Massachusetts. So what do you think? I mean, does rail work for Massachusetts because there's so many people clustered in cities? And does it work for New Hampshire?
Well, I think the reason I'm here is that I fundamentally agree with Peter on a lot of things. Rail is a good investment generically because it gives mobility options to people to travel in a more sustainable way than the major problem we have in the United States, which is the single-occupant automobile. But I'm also here to remind everybody that buses are a very positive way to give mobility to people to carry out our sustainable strategies. Van pools are a way to give people mobility and allow this transportation to occur in a sustainable way. Even carpools, you may not like them, but they are a very efficient alternative. The problem, Laura, is that we as transportation planners are very much like the human race described by your guest yesterday. We tend to cluster into groups. So we cluster into groups and say, widening I-93 will solve all our problems. Or we get an advocacy position, which is good, which is we really want rail because rail will solve all our problems. And the great need here is to come up with strategies that assemble all these component parts. And quite honestly, this is what I do for a living. I work on complicated transportation issues. And you got a problem here. To solve this problem creatively, two states have to work together.
New Hampshire and Massachusetts.
New Hampshire and Massachusetts, and good luck to you.
Well, why do you say that, good luck to you?
Because it's the nature of the political process that a voter in Massachusetts will say, why should I give up part of my lane on I-93 for those people, that other tribe, like your guest yesterday was pointing out? Why should I help that other tribe up in New Hampshire? This is silly. If we lived in Texas, there would be no such thing as a New Hampshire person arguing with a Massachusetts person. But we live up here. And so we've got to get a political consensus. The group that was spun off from the I-93 study, by the way, was called the Bi-State Transit Investment Study. Good piece of work, but to do it, you need two states working together.
So, Matthew, you said generically trains are a good idea, but from that I take that in some specific instances they are not a good idea. So what about New Hampshire?
In the political context, I think you have two choices. One of the choice is the overall modal strategy, which says, I'm going to bite the full apple at once, and gosh darn it, my train has not only has to go to Concord, it's got to get up to Lebanon after Concord. These strategies are very difficult to carry out. The other strategy is called incremental. You take a given situation and try to get yourself a victory. And if you could get 9 miles from Lowell to Manchester, I apologize, Lowell to Nashua, that's what I meant to say, 9 miles from Lowell to Nashua, you could get a victory and start with something.
What do you think about that, Peter? Start small.
Actually, we already have an excellent example, and that's the Downeaster. The Downeaster has proven everything that that rail could provide to the region. It's provided a transportation mode that is well used. It has provided economic development opportunities, the Saco Mills. It's revived Old Orchard Beach. The property values have gone through the roof already in anticipation of the extension to Brunswick. The example is already there. They're looking at 93 as the cure-all. We have
expanding
93 as the cure-all. It is not the cure-all. It's a stopgap method to addressing an issue that we don't have a transportation system. We have one mode of transportation, and you can apply the same arguments for rail as you can apply for widening 93. We need it for economic development. There's historic examples in the state where when rail has been introduced, it has provided great economic development. The downtown areas of Derry, New Hampshire, and Salem came into being in the 1840s and 50s when rail was introduced. But people fail to consider that. They're looking just at, we widen 93, that will solve everything. It will not.
Well, I guess the unknown, though, is, you know, like it or not, Peter, we know people will jump in their cars and go down to Boston on I-93. We don't really know if they will jump on the train and go down to Boston.
Well, Matthew was referring to buses. Buses are an excellent mode of transportation. There is now a Route 93 bus system in place that is highly used. So it really neutralizes the argument that people will not use alternative modes of transportation to go to Boston. They are, and they like it. But people said to me, when are you getting the rail?
So if there were this rail all of a sudden, would new people get on the rail? Or would the same folks who take the bus now go, oh, good, now I don't have to get stuck in traffic and I'm going to take the train?
I think they'll begin to take the train.
New people.
New people.
Not just the people who are currently taking the bus.
Exactly. They will be conditioned to using another mode of transportation. What people fail to consider also is, can this, the availability of a new transportation mode, specifically rail, be a marketing tool in selling one's house or developing one's commercial property? If you can provide, say, to someone, well, you work in Boston, there is a rail line here with regular commuter service, in this case, commuter service to Boston, buy my house, and they'll say, yes, I'll buy your house because that's exactly what I'm looking for.
Mm. What do you think, Matthew?
I think that there may be two New Hampshires in the same discussion. And if you look at the travel times, just I made these up by staring at the MBTA timetables. Basically, given that an express can go from Lowell to Boston in about 40 minutes, which is superb, you can get to Nashua in just about under an hour. A human being is willing to say, I would argue, yeah, I will spend an hour to get to North Station. Then they got to spend 20 minutes getting out of North Station. I'll do that hour because I don't have to drive. I don't have the hassles, et cetera. Then we start looking at Manchester, which I don't know, is another 20 minutes or so. And then we start looking at Concord. And we realize that there is a natural market shed. And dear Lord, Nashua is in it, and that's why I argued to go for immediate success.
Okay, we will talk more after a short break, so stay with us.
More coming up on The Exchange in just a few here on NHPR, then at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show. This week marks 5 years since the Virginia Tech shootings, but advocates for gun control have made little progress. The politics behind America's gun culture, that's coming up at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show here on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, from the Montshire Museum of Science in Norwich, exploring the link between dinosaurs and modern birds with Charlie and Kiwi's evolutionary adventure now through May 13th, Montshire.org. From Riviere College's Global Studies program, sponsoring the World Affairs Council's Global Forum featuring Senator George Mitchell, April 23rd at 6 p.m. at SNHU, tickets at WACNH.org. And from the New Hampshire Community Loan Fund, turning investments into loans and education to create opportunity and transform lives, CommunityLoanFund.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the debate surrounding passenger rail in the Granite State. Let's hear from you. Does rail make sense for New Hampshire or not? 1-800-892-6477 is our number. 1-800-892-NHPR. Or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. And we go now to the city of Nashua that we've been talking about, to speak with Alderman Brian McCarthy of the Gateway City. And Brian McCarthy, good to have you. Thank you for your time.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Well, why did Nashua feel that more study was needed of this proposed link from Boston to Nashua and Concord? This is, again, the federal grant that the Executive Council rejected. It seems to me this issue has been studied several times before, Brian. So why did you need money to study it again?
Well, rail has been studied, but not the project that was anticipated in the two grants that are outstanding for this study, which would look at rail not just in Nashua but also up to Manchester Airport, and one of them deals specifically with the Capital Corridor rail project up to Concord.
Capital Rail Corridor, again, is Boston, Nashua, Manchester, Concord, or?
Yes.
Okay. So you're saying rail has been studied, but not these specifics of these two projects?
Correct.
What about the long-held concern, Brian, that New Hampshire does not have the population to make this huge investment worthwhile? I wonder what you think about that.
I think, to some extent, it's a chicken and egg. We will have the population, and it's a question of whether you want that growth to be done in a way that is orderly and that has economic development associated with it, or if you just want to have the burden of more residents but not more business to back them up. You know, we are, for better or worse, part of the Boston metropolitan area. Many of our people work there. We would like to have people who live there work here and have businesses in New Hampshire. We would love to have Manchester Airport thriving, and that's not likely to happen unless we have a better transit system overall and you know, all modes of transit connecting southern New Hampshire with the rest of the region.
So you don't buy that argument, that we don't have enough people to make it worthwhile?
No, I don't.
Your executive counsel, David Wheeler, also said that there are so many other demands on state government at this time that he couldn't justify the $400,000 in matching state funds that would have had to have been found if this grant had been approved. What do you think about that? $400,000 is a big chunk of change for the state at this time.
It is, and we're investing amounts like that elsewhere. We just authorized another $600,000 to subsidize the bus travel to Logan Airport and to Boston. So basically the state is actually paying to ship its own jobs out of state.
Now, what do you mean by that, Brian?
I mean by that we are, rather than making it easier for people to fly out of Manchester and use our airport, we are, among other things, carrying 50,000 passengers a year to Logan on a bus line that is partially paid for by the state.
Yeah, that's been a bone of contention, I know, that we're subsidizing a line to Massachusetts' Logan Airport instead of our own Manchester Airport. So what do rail supporters like you in Nashua do now? Is there a plan B, Brian?
There's several plans. We're working on, you know, can we find the match money somewhere else and simply go ahead with the study? Are there other projects we could do that are less complex? I personally believe that anything that's done in southern New Hampshire ought to include the connection to the airport because of the viability of the airport. But if needed, you know, Nashua could actually be serviced by a station that wasn't even in New Hampshire. There's a fine location just south of the border near the Pheasant Lane Mall that we could use for Nashua commuters to get to Boston and back. But I'd hate to see it come to that.
So there are other options that you're going to explore.
Yes.
Well, Brian, thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Okay.
That's Alderman Brian McCarthy of Nashua, again, talking about the city's disappointment over the lack of a federal planning grant for a rail link from Boston and possible solutions to this issue that the city might now pursue. Our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Again, we're looking at whether passenger rail makes sense for New Hampshire. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Peter Griffin, just to follow up quickly with you on what we heard from Brian McCarthy, he said, okay, disappointed that this grant didn't go through for the big line from Boston all the way up to Concord, but possibly a scale-back proposal. What do you think about that?
My own personal opinion, I think it's very short-sighted, and I know the Transit Authority has reviewed this at a recent meeting, and they really want to support the original project description that is going to Manchester and Concord. They felt that for it to be successful, it needed to include those three cities, which are the main cities in New Hampshire, but also commenting on the Alderman's reference to the Manchester Airport. If the Manchester Airport wants to be able to become an international airport, they need an access by public transportation. That is being demanded by the carriers that would fly out of Manchester. So New Hampshire has to understand that they really have to make an investment to attract business. They just can't rely on the largesse of business making the investment hopefully, like in Downey's, the service, someone else paying for it.
Although I wonder, and, you know, Matthew Coogan brought this up before, Peter, you know, are you cutting off your nose to spite your face here? I mean, should you focus now on what Matthew called a small victory, at least getting Nashua connected to Boston?
I think we're talking apples and oranges. You have the victory in the Downeaster service. That disputed the question, put to rest the argument, would people use public transportation? Yes, they would. And UNH is using it as a marketing tool to attract students and faculty. So that shows a full dimension of how this service could be used. We have campuses for UNH and other schools in downtown Manchester. Would that be a way of attracting students to those campuses?
What do you think about this, Matthew, that the Downeaster is Exhibit A to the question of whether Granite Staters would take the rail in enough numbers to justify the cost?
I think the Downeaster is Exhibit A to the difference in the political structure of Maine and New Hampshire, the political attitudes in Maine and New Hampshire. Now, Peter says that my strategy is short-sighted. I would argue that all political decisions are short-sighted. If you don't have the consensus to get the full dream that you want to do, such as they did, and the big difference in Maine is a political decision to use CMAQ funding.
CMAQ
that is congestion management air quality. It's a lump of money that comes from the feds, and you can do anything you want with it.
Unlike gas tax revenues, which you can only use for highways.
Unlike state highway revenues. I heard boning up for this particular conversation, somebody said if you built a parking garage with federal highway funds for a bus, you could never use it for rail. That's bunk. The federal dollars absolutely can. You can use a federal highway dollar to build a parking lot for rail. Federal highway dollars don't care. What you're dealing with, again, is the specifics of New Hampshire political structure and New Hampshire rules. So in Maine, if they have a consensus that says we'll take these glorious CMAQ funds and we'll subsidize the train, that's great. But if you don't have the same consensus in New Hampshire, you got to come up with a different strategy.
So are you saying, Matthew, that it's about politics, not population here in New Hampshire?
It's about a set of political attitudes, sure.
That we do have a population density to justify rail?
As the caller and Peter have both pointed out, Nashua is defined by the United States Census as being within the standard metropolitan statistical area.
So for Nashua, yes.
It's there. There's no debate about that. I ask you to go to a map. Take a look at Worcester. Take a look at Providence and even down to the airport south of Providence. Look at Plymouth. And they're all about the same distance from Boston as Nashua. If there was no state line between New Hampshire and Massachusetts, that line would have been built in the last surge of money that came during the Central Artery period.
What about Concord or Manchester then?
They're different. There are worthy and interesting ideas. But if you look at the travel time characteristics, something happens when you put people in a bus. If you put people in a bus in Concord, you have the right to shut the door and go nonstop and not open that door until South Station. That is not the nature of a line that you're sharing with good people in Billerica and good people in Lowell and Tingsboro and other places where you have to stop the train.
On the other hand, my husband takes that bus, and it often gets dead stuck in traffic.
What a surprise. You brought that up. You asked, why did I drive down here this morning? It is outrageous that the two states cannot get together to figure out a mechanism to give that bus the same kind of priority attention it would get in virtually every other urbanized state in the United States.
Okay, and I want to talk more about buses in just a moment, but let's let our listeners into our conversation as well. 1-800-892-6477 is the number, and Will's calling from Berlin. Hi, Will, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'd like to say that I live north of Mount Washington in the Androscoggin Valley in New Hampshire. And I'm totally in favor of the rail system, and I would like to see a rail system go right up through the state and connect with the Canadian border. And we're in the heart of ski country, and we could really use the tourism. So
you wouldn't say not just Nashua, Manchester, Concord, Will, but all the way up to Berlin and Canada?
Yeah, all the way up through the state, right, connecting to the Canadian rail system.
Okay, well, thanks for calling, Peter.
I think the gentleman's comments are very timely because one of there's a historic thing that happened and a current thing that is happening. Maine is looking at a Portland to Montreal service, which would run up through Berlin and Gorham.
Oh, really?
Yes, that's going to be the next step after the extension to Brunswick. Whether or not that happens, we don't know. Time will tell. The other historic element that we have to look at is there was a study done jointly between the province of Quebec, Vermont, Massachusetts, and New Hampshire that a phase one estimated ridership at 600,000 people. When it came to New Hampshire putting up the money for phase two, I was told by a former DOT commissioner, why should we spend money on something we know we're never going to do? So that's the attitude. They don't want to invest in knowledge. They just want to summarily write it off because fiscally it may not seem like a good thing to do.
What about extending all the way up through the tourist regions, Matthew, and the North Country onto Canada? Does that make sense from a fiscal or passenger standpoint, in your opinion?
It depends on the political support for it. It would be a highly desirable thing to take a train all the way up to the Cog Railway and to Mount Washington area, but somebody has to pay for it. And as long as the political consensus says we're not in these operating cost business, and I repeat, they found a solution in Maine. So they've got a base to say, yeah, we're going to do this and we have a method to fund it. You have to think simultaneously. Such a train would make me happy. I would use it.
But
the question is whether there's political consensus here in this state, where I'm not a resident, that they should spend money that way.
Well, I wonder, too, you know, tourists might take it. Maybe this is a question more for you, Peter. Tourists might take it, but how many times a year do you go up to the White Mountains? You know, twice a year? I mean, can you really justify a cost going all the way up through the Whites and the North Country for something people might take a couple times a year as tourists?
Well, considering that most of the resorts in the White Mountains are now positioning themselves to be year-round resorts with second homeowners owning property up there, yes, that could be very much the case.
I want to bring another voice into our conversation, gentlemen. This is Chris Sununu, Executive Counselor for District 3, which covers the Seacoast. Again, he was one of three votes that voted against the federal grant for this rail study. And Counselor Sununu, good to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very, very much, Laura. How are you today?
Well, I'm fine, thanks. And just tell us, if you could, briefly, why you voted against the funding for this rail study, which the folks in Nashua really wanted.
Well, I think the main reason is I'm shooting for a bullet train from Boston to Waterville Valley nonstop.
Which is where you're from originally, right?
Yeah, no, that's crazy. Look, a couple things come into play. This is a $3.7 million, two contracts, $3.7 million just to study Concord to Manchester to Nashua down to Lowell. We didn't approve it because we had already taken that project out of the 10-year highway plan. You're talking hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars for a project that has really no economic viability whatsoever, not just from a capital cost standpoint, but from an operational cost.
So,
and that kind of gets me to one of the points one of your guests there made. This is the furthest thing from politics. This is not politics at all. It simply comes down to dollars and practicality. One of the things that you were discussing earlier was, well, why not just look at Lowell to Nashua? Exactly. Why don't we look at Lowell to Nashua? Nobody wants to bring that forward. There's a 2004 study. Just needs to be updated for a few hundred thousand dollars. Now, that's not chump change, but that's a practical first step. But they don't want to bring that to the council. They don't want to bring that forward. They want to go all the way. It's all or nothing with the Fed. And this council has a responsibility. Our primary responsibility of the council is to really manage and be the checks and balances against how people's dollars are spent. And we're just not going to start throwing millions and millions away on a project that really has no economic viability whatsoever.
So a scaled-back proposal might have been okay, but this
absolutely.
All or nothing, yeah.
Absolutely. Councilor Wheeler was on the forefront of that. I've been very vocal about it. I would love to just see, for a few hundred thousand, we update the 2004 plan, we look at the economic viability, we put that on the table, look at the economic viability, Lowell to Nashua, and there's a possibility that we can get that done. But they don't want to do that. The feds have no interest in that because they said, well, we already did the 2004 plan. You need to update it, but we only want to go to Manchester and Concord. But that's not practical for us, and so we're not going to spend millions on something that just doesn't work. Our priority is I-93. You want to talk about the economic driver of New Hampshire? It's I-93. You know those buses that sit in traffic? It's because I-93 isn't done yet. So we have to really put our priorities. It's what the governor said in his State of the State address this year. I-93 is a major priority for us. That's where our dollars need to go. We need to knock that out. And then we can talk 5-10 years down the road about expanding rail and making second
sets. The buses are stuck in Massachusetts. They're not really stuck in New Hampshire.
Well, I've gotten stuck in both of them, but mostly Massachusetts,
well,
right.
Of course we all have, but I think that it's indisputable that I-93 has to get done. And that's $200 to $300 million. That's where the bulk of our capital really needs to go. That should have been done 15 years ago. We got to knock that out, and then we can talk about, you know, dreams and whatnot. I mean, you know, I sometimes feel like I have to give people a reality check. There's no money out there.
Well,
there's
Council no Sununu, money to be yeah. Are the monies for I-93 in competition with rail monies? I'm not talking about the study now. I'm talking about, you know, broadly, if we were to go and do this.
It's not so much that it's in competition, but they're all federal tax dollars. And we have a responsibility to spend every tax dollar responsibly and check it and see where the best use of our bucks are going to be spent. You know, I tell folks in the North Country, there's a lot of a very strong commercial and freight rail up in the North Country. And what I tried to tell them is, look, every dollar that we're trying to spend on a fantasy project to put rail Concord to Boston down on the southern part of the state is another dollar that we're not putting into the north part of the state into something that might be more economically and viably practical for jobs up there, which is commercial or freight rail. So that's where I think the competition for dollars comes into play. But
one more question. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Councilor Sununu. Yeah. I apologize. We've got about 1 more minute left. Just the question about the traffic. At some point, you can't build more highways to accommodate growing traffic. You reach a saturation mm-hmm. point. If not rail, what's the solution?
Well, no, I'll go back. I think a first step rail to Nashua, which is, again, myself and Councilor Whelan and most of the other council, I think, would support. First step rail to Nashua, that would be a viable first step. And that's a smart thing to do. It's economically safe, so to say, in that it's a first step. The capital can be, maybe we can come to a deal with Massachusetts, and we can see if it works. But this whole idea of doing something up to Concord, and again, to Peter's comment, you know, rail for tourism, that's ridiculous. That's just not going to work. I don't know. Maybe there's some booming tourism in downtown Concord that I don't know about. But, you know, the tourism in this state is the lakes, the mountains, the beaches. Rail's just not going to go to those places, and that's not going to be a driver. Nobody
All
puts
right.
their keys on a train and heads up north.
Councilor Sununu, good to talk to you. Thank you so
Thank
much.
You.
Bye-bye. And we'll get your thoughts, gentlemen, after a short break. And we'll keep taking your calls, too. So if you're on the line, stay there. 1-800-892-6477.
Today on Word of Mouth, Xanax Nation. The anti-anxiety drugs that were once dirty little secrets are now out of the closet. We'll hear about the growing number of busy people functioning with a little help from their pills. Plus, spring recipes you don't have to wait for. I'm Virginia Prescott. Word of Mouth welcomes the Fiddleheads today at noon and again at 9 on NHPR.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, from Grupponi Auto Group. Featuring multiple lines of fuel-efficient, environmentally friendly cars at Grupponi Auto Junction in Bow and online 24 hours a day at grupponi.com. And from Champlain College's Masters in Fine Art in Emergent Media, for those who like to create, collaborate, innovate, masters.champlain.edu. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, Homeland Security expert Frank Salufo will be joining us. He'll speak at the Global Tipping Points Conference at UNH Manchester on Tuesday. He'll be talking with us about where we stand in terms of homeland security. Email us your thoughts and questions before the program at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at yet another roadblock for rail in New Hampshire, and let's hear from you. How realistic do you see rail for New Hampshire, given that we are a largely rural and suburban state? Does this make sense for us or not? Where might the money come from to pay for passenger train service, given that state gas tax revenues can't be used for rail? Our number again, 1-800-892-6477. The email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Peter Griffin, I feel like we've talked about this before, but I do want to address this with you again. Chris Sununu, executive counselor that we just heard from, said, look, go ahead, update the 2004 study for rail from Nashua into Massachusetts. But you're biting off too much here. This idea of Concord all the way down to Boston is too much. And what do you think? Are you letting the perfect be the enemy of the good? I guess that's the question.
I think that perhaps maybe a compromise is in place, but it's not up for me to say. But if the argument is, will people use the service? Again, it's been answered by the Downeaster. Yes, people will use public transportation. As far as the council's comments on tourism, you look at Europe. Europe's great tourist destinations are all connected by public transportation. As far as it not being a political issue, of course it's a political issue. If there's an investment of money that has to be made and they have to find an alternative mode of funding, they're not going to do it. I-93, the golden project that everyone's rallied behind, it was very clear in the current legislature, we're not going to find any new fees or taxes to widen 93. End of discussion. So if it's such an important project, why did they not say, we believe in this, we will find a way of funding it? They're expanding the Garvey bonds, which is something they never wanted to do, is bond projects.
What did you think about Councillor Sununu's comment there, that this is not about politics, it's about bodies, physical people, Matthew, getting on the train and paying for tickets?
There's nothing wrong with politics. Politics is the way we work as a society. There's absolutely nothing pejorative in my comment at all. If the structure of the main government says, look, I have a source of subsidy, and the structure of New Hampshire government says, oh, no, you couldn't do that, that's politics. And I think politics is a fine thing myself. But just let me point out, I've been involved this kind of design work now for 40 years of my life. And I hope the councillor doesn't and his colleagues don't take an either-or attitude towards the existence of something like $3.5 or more federal dollars waiting to be spent in the economy of New Hampshire. When you're doing a short-term fix, like I'm talking about, getting to Nashua, the designer of that train and the person who writes the environmental impact statement really should know if there's a long-term future for Manchester and a long-term future for Concord, because it affects the design.
So it's not an either-or situation.
It is not an either-or, and there's money out there with a little creativity. I'm sure that scope could be directed towards near-term focus on Nashua and these bus issues, which I am desperate to talk about, but we'll get to it.
We'll take another call first, and up next is Frank in Brookline. Hi, Frank. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. It's the Pan Am Company, who owns all the railroad tracks in the Northeast, are very unwelcoming of having any kind of mass transit on their rail system. So, you know, you think before we start planning anything, we'd make sure that we have the blessings of those guys. And at this point, I'm not sure you're going to get it.
Yeah, Frank,
I'd love to hear your comments off the air.
No, and thanks for raising that question. We talked about that before, Peter, on other shows, but go ahead.
It's my understanding that there is now an agreement between the MBTA and Pan Am to use their corridor, which is we're referring to as the Capital Corridor, for passenger rail. So
can you back up a little bit? Because a lot of folks might not even be sure what the deal is with Pan Am.
Pan Am Railroad is the descendant of the Boston and Maine Railroad. They've gone through several incarnations, and they operate a number of rail lines in New England. The one in question, the Capital Corridor, which runs from the Mass border up to Concord, is their property. It's a major freight corridor. It carries coal trains to Bow, and they also serve other customers. That is the corridor in question where the passenger service would run. They, as I just said, MBTA and Pan Am have an agreement that would allow the Pan Am corridor to be used for passenger rail. It would mean an upgrade of their infrastructure, which would be quite beneficial to Pan Am.
So MBTA, Massachusetts
Bay Transportation Authority, right, which is the commuter rail operator in Massachusetts.
So they've worked something out with Pan Am, mm-hmm. But does that apply to New Hampshire? Because
yes.
As I understand, there was a fight about this a couple of years ago.
I believe it has been resolved.
It's been resolved?
Yes.
There are all sorts of angry letters back and forth, and I won't play ball with you, and well, I won't play ball with you either. That's done?
It's my understanding, yes, that is done.
Did you want to jump in there, Matthew,
no,
and then we'll talk about buses?
I want to talk about buses, but I would object to any, I thank the caller, but I object to the whole concept that you need a blessing of that particular group before you set a public policy.
Well,
that's
don't
a
you
much
need their,
bigger
but
subject.
But wait, don't you need their tracks?
You should talk to Peter Burling about that. He's been working with his New Hampshire group for some time. There are alternatives to purchasing it. There are various ways to get control over what society needs, and that organization has been following whatever motivations they seem to be appropriate, and I just don't like the word blessing.
Well, let's talk about buses.
Let's talk about buses.
Because I know you want to, Matthew. When President Obama was talking a lot about high-speed rail during the stimulus package debate a couple years back, 2009, the New York Times looked at rail versus what's called bus rapid transit. So this refers to modernized bus systems that use dedicated bus lanes to travel quickly, not get stuck in traffic, which we talked about before. And the article said these can cost less than half of what a light rail system can cost. What do you think, Matthew? Is this where New Hampshire should look?
You don't have to listen to me. You really don't. Take a look at the results of the bi-state transit investment study that was spun off by the very hard work of the New Hampshire Department of Transportation for the I-93 project, and you'll see it's all spelled out there. Basically, your husband does not like getting stuck on that bus. My wife does not like it. The economic development of the farthest northern area, they're stuck in that traffic. The manner in which to take a bus, there are a variety of strategies, including using the breakdown lane at a small speed. They're all in that report. You, the taxpayers of New Hampshire, paid for that report, and nobody's read it. What you need is the cooperation of Massachusetts to do it.
So you wouldn't need to build new lanes to do this, lane.
I'd rather not answer the question of what is the perfect civil engineering solution. Mm-hmm. But in general, what you do is manage your lanes better so that you get pro-societal use out of those lanes, encouraging people to take sustainable patterns rather than unsustainable.
And Peter, I know you want to jump in, but just two quickies, Matthew. I live for 15 years in the Washington, D.C. area, so obviously traffic was bad there too. And there were high occupancy vehicle lanes from Virginia going into D.C., HOV lanes.
Still are.
And people used to put, blow up dummies, or they'd put their dog in the car. I mean, anything to make it look like they had an extra person. So there's a possibility of
which
abuse.
Which implies to me that there is a demand for those services, and I think we can get beyond
And that isn't a dedicated bus lane, so understood there. But I do remember when Virginia also started using the breakdown lane for high occupancy vehicles. Again, not a bus lane, but high occupancy vehicles, so more than one passenger. And I remember reading that headline and thinking, "Ooh, what happens to the folks who are broken down?" Well, and not 2 days later, a man was killed. He was in the breakdown lane, which he should have been. His car broken down. And it had just been open for an HOV lane, and the guy was killed.
State of Massachusetts currently allows the breakdown lane to be used for quite a few miles on I-93. And anybody who wants to take his little Maserati and pass you on the right can dive into that breakdown lane, go whatever speed they want, and cut you off coming back. Nothing could be worse than that. We are discussing trained bus operators who are only allowed to do it in a monitored method. I'll be glad to show you the literature. I think your piece of data is anecdotal in nature.
So, and buses, again, a bus driver is going to be more on the ball than your average Joe scooting down the
highway. They are professionals.
Okay.
They are professionals trained to do that.
Peter, go ahead.
The study to which Matthew was referring, NHRRA was a stakeholder in that study, so I was very involved with the progress of that study. They distilled about 13 different transportation modes down to the final two, one of which was a bus on shoulder using the existing breakdown lane down 93. It was to begin at Boston, and as they rebuilt the highway, go north. Well, they've rebuilt the highway in the Somerville area. They have not accounted for that at all. So that may be dead in the water. The second most popular option was restoring service on the Manchester-Lawrence corridor, which coincidentally enough connects with Rockingham Park, which was going to be one of the great gambling meccas. But they've chose to give up the corridor.
Rail corridor.
They've chosen to give up the corridor for use by bicycles. The study has never been completed. It's my understanding DOT has not allocated funds to complete the study. It's an excellent study because it not only looks at transportation, it's looking at the economic development. What parcels of property are available for development along that, in this case, the rail corridor, if rail were restored through the Methuen, Salem, Derry, Londonderry area?
I think Peter just said that there's steps taken by the state of Massachusetts that make it difficult to get the buses through. I totally concur. That is my major point. Two states have to look at this as a common problem, and two states have to solve it together.
Massachusetts and New Hampshire. Let's take another call. This is Brian in Nashua. Hi, Brian. Thanks for waiting. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Good morning, Laura. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I'm a representative from Nashua, District 22, on the House Transportation Committee. And I can, you know, state unequivocally that there was no mention in any of the House hearings for any type of compromise whatsoever. This was an up or down vote, and the members, you know, of who brought this bill forward, and I'll say the members of the majority party, basically said if Nashua wants rail, Nashua can pay for rail. So, you know, there was no compromise talks whatsoever. I can't really speak about the Senate, what went on there, or the Executive Council, but I can guarantee you that.
So what do you think? Would a compromise be a good idea, a smaller-scale project, Brian?
Well, I think as all the callers have been talking and some of your panel, it's a big picture here. This is intermodal. No one's really talking about freight. You know, we can talk about how we want to get jobs, we want to get industry, we want to get manufacturers to New Hampshire. But I have on a very good source from a representative that I trust that spoke to a very large business owner in Londonderry, New Hampshire. And that business owner told him, I wish I could get my products to the Midwest in larger quantities quicker. And I could do that with rail.
So we should be talking about freight and passenger.
Well, I believe that's where the conversation was right from the beginning. Part of this study was to look at both of these aspects of rail. And no one wants to, you know, nobody wants to talk about it. And we can say that the North Country doesn't get anything from this. But if you look at the tax structure in New Hampshire with the business taxes, the rooms and meals taxes, you know, let's be real here and see where does the money come from that's really funding the state of New Hampshire?
Now, that's an interesting point. So he's saying, you know, that the economic development might seem to be just to southern New Hampshire's benefit, but that there would be larger benefits given the tax structure. Peter, I can tell you want to jump in.
I think it's disappointing, going back to what Councilor Sununu said, pitting the north against the south. That always seems to be the convenient modus operandi. As far as freight, I've gone to a lot of the transit meetings, and freight has always been mentioned. It's an integral part of the business program in New Hampshire to have freight rail as part of that mix. As far as the party, the majority party in the legislature, it was the Speaker of the House that did his best to kill the Transit Authority and kill any opportunity for future rail. So I think one of the things we have to consider is we have an election in the fall. And if the general populace really believes that this is an important part of the New Hampshire economy and would be beneficial to their marketing, their homes, their properties, they need to make transportation an issue with the candidates for office.
Do you want to jump in there, Matthew, some of the points Brian brought
just
up?
Just, Brian, on the freight, I've got to be with Peter totally and completely that finding an excuse to leveraging some federal dollars to improve the quality of the track from the Concord area to the Massachusetts border is totally in the interest of freight. There's no dichotomy there. I thank Brian for his very perceptive observation about the way this was brought up in the political process. Compromise is part of the political process. And expenditure of some dollars that seem to help the South may have implications throughout the state. It's too bad that this becomes so polarized. It's too bad.
And to wrap up with both of you, and I think I'll go to you first, Matthew. So we've seen political support for rail here in New Hampshire wax and wane. There was some excitement about it a couple years back with the stimulus package, and then the Transit Authority came under fire. We've kind of gone back and forth on this over the past 5 or 6 years. What do you think? Do you think the climate will change for rail here in New Hampshire or not, Matthew?
I believe, as I've said to Peter, that the best thing that could happen to the politics of rail in New Hampshire would be a nice, solid victory. And just by staring at the MBTA map down to Providence and over to Worcester, you've got a potential victory to start with. I wouldn't be myopic, though, and say I will accept some federal dollars with the word Nashua on them, but I won't accept the federal dollars if they say in future to Concord and Manchester. You need both in order to make good political decisions. Rail needs a victory, and I think you could get a victory here.
Do you want to jump in, Peter? Final thoughts on how this is going to evolve in the next couple of years?
I think it's going to be positive. I really, we will reach critical max as far as constructing highways. Why has it taken 40 years to widen it from four lanes from Mass border to Manchester? There's something inherently wrong with how we do business with capital projects in the state, and this is part of that whole mix. We need to find a way of investing in our capital projects to make the state economy even stronger.
All right. Well, it's good to talk to both of you. And Peter, thank you for making the trip in. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome, Laura.
Peter Griffin, president of the New Hampshire Railroad Revitalization Association. And Matthew Coogan, it was good to meet you. Thank you for being here as well.
My pleasure.
Matthew Coogan, director of the nonprofit New England Transportation Institute and a former undersecretary of transportation for Massachusetts. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer this week is Craig Martin. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Ryan Lassard. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.